All right, we'll pick up from where we left off. We're still kind of for the next half of this lecture talking mostly about the mathematics of rotating a vector field and the mathematical tools to handle that, which leads us into vector spherical harmonics. And for analyzing such a general vector field in spherical coordinates. And just to remind you, we said that if you have a rotation operator that would rotate a vector x to a new vector x prime, characterize that by this rotation operator r, then you have to keep track of two things. One is that the position at which you evaluate the vector field changes by because of the rotation, and there's a scrambling of the x, y, and z components, and that's what the leading rotation matrix R accomplishes. Good morning. And I think one of the last things I showed was that the infinitesimal form of that rotation operator can be written as 1 minus I times an infinitesimal angle alpha for rotating about the z-axis times the sum of LZ, which is this operator, which you can think of as coming from the first non-trivial term of the Taylor expansion, the first order term from the expansion of the argument of the vector field. And then the part, a matrix representing the scrambling of the x, y, and z components, which I've called the SZ matrix. And this is intended to be an exact, actually exact analogy with rotating a spin one particle in quantum mechanics. And the math is really all the same. So again, LZ handles the this is like the orbital part, which is going to work on the argument of the function, and the SZ part is the spin part, which is like the vector nature, the x, y, and z components of the fields. One of the interesting things to calculate are the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of the spin operator. These are, you can kind of read off by inspection. There is E hat plus one, which the usual convention for the phase puts a minus sign in front. And it's minus 1 over root 2 times x hat plus I y hat, and the eigenvalue is plus 1 for that SZ operator. There is a second eigenvector E0, which is just z hat corresponding to eigenvalue 0, and third eigenvector E minus 1, which is 1 over root 2 x hat minus I y hat with eigenvalue minus 1. And these are just what we called, I think I'd introduced something very similar, although possibly without this minus sign in E plus 1, which are just the spherical components of the usual Cartesian unit vectors. And they're, of course, orthonormal. You have to remember to complex conjugate one of them when you take the dot product. Let's see, why is someone bothering me? Let's put this on stun. So a few observations about this whole development. First, the whole algebra of rotations is basically the same as the algebra of rotations in quantum mechanics. And as you know, that hinges on commutation relations. So let me point out some of those JZ commutes, first of all, with all the differential operators that define the vector field, at least for the vector field we're talking about here, which are Maxwell's equations. Second point, JZ commutes with the curl operator. Right, so the curl of JZ acting on A, vector field A, is JZ times the curl of A. Third, the three components correspond to rotation among around any of the three Cartesian coordinate axes. These obey the standard angular momentum commutation relations we learn in quantum mechanics. For instance, Jx, Jy is Ijz, and all the cyclic permutations of that. So Jy, Jz commutator is Ijx, and so on. When I say the standard angular momentum commutation relations, I mean, of course, with the h-bar omitted, because these are dimensionless angular momentum operators as we've defined them. Fourth point, I guess I already wrote this, but LZ is minus ID by D phi. If you want to see the explicit forms of LX and LY, they're a little more complicated. You can grab those from your favorite quantum textbook. I don't think I'll write them now. Another way of writing SZ acting on A is I z hat cross A, interesting relation. And similarly, Sx acting on A is I x hat cross A, and so on. Fifth property you might expect from the analogy with quantum mechanics, that S squared Em hat is 2 Em hat. So these, as we said, these are eigenvectors of Sz, but also of S squared operator. Sz Em hat is M Em hat. So these are, you can really think of Em hat as in Braquette notation, as a spinner with total spin quantum number 1 and magnetic quantum number m. Right, so this 2 is s times s plus 1. And the orthogonality relation You can check for yourself from those eigenvectors I wrote down, em star dotted into em prime, hat is a Kronecker delta, mm prime. So, since we have this analogy with the full algebra connects exactly with the algebra of quantum operators, we can find eigenstates of the total angular momentum, or more correctly, the total squared angular momentum, using the machinery we develop in quantum mechanics, namely Clebsch-Gordan coefficients. And that will be useful for defining the vector spherical harmonics. So let's define the vector spherical harmonics. That you can use to expand any vector field. Okay, I would write this in a tensor notation. Something like this. By analogy with the tensor, spherical tensor notation one uses in quantum mechanics with spherical tensors, like when you derive the Wigner-Eckhart theorem or work with irreducible tensor decompositions. So this would be the coupling of a spherical harmonic Y of L with the spin operator or the spin Ketz to form a total quantum number J, and if you want to designate its total Z component of J, you would put an M subscript.
In Barcelovich, is it referred to as the spin spherical harmonic? Is that what he
referred to? Probably, but I don't actually remember their terminology. I just use their equations. So another way I might write that in the quantum world is L S J M, with implying the orbital is coupled to the spin to make a total angular momentum J and component M. Okay, so without further ado, here is the definition. Y will always put the upper index to be the orbital index, orbital quantum number, if you let me use that, although we're doing classical E and M. And we'll put the total J and its component at the bottom. And this will be a vector that depends on theta and phi, right? Different from an ordinary spherical harmonic, which is not a vector, it's a scalar function. Okay, so this will be just the ordinary Clebsch-Gordan sum from m, little m, from minus L to L. I guess now I'm calling sigma the spin component. So we'll sum over the spin components from minus 1, 0, and 1. Then we'll have a YLM of theta phi. The spin component sigma, spherical component sigma, and a Clebsch-Gordan coefficient, Lm 1 sigma jm. And the allowed j values will follow from the usual rules of angular momentum addition. Right, the triangularity rules you learned in quantum say that L minus 1 less than or equal to J less than or equal to L plus 1. And of course, J greater than or equal to 0. And so in this case, J will have these three values in general, L minus 1, L, or L plus 1, unless L equals 0. Then only J equals 1. Right, if L is 0, this triangularity says that J is between 1 and 1. So for this chapter, Jackson does not define this most general form. You need this for the most general expansion of a vector field. But Jackson only, and we will focus on primarily, the J equals L vector spherical harmonic. And because of that, they give that a separate notation and define by the capital X vector spherical harmonic. They don't write L twice just because of it would be a redundant. But this is basically our general form written over there, but with J equals L. So that's the definition of the only vector spherical harmonic you'll find in Jackson. And Jackson, I don't think, writes this out with Clebsch-Gordan's, but gives another form that is equivalent, and this definition I gave here reduces to Jackson's, which is namely, can write it explicitly as the angular momentum operator divided by root LL plus 1, acting on an ordinary scalar spherical harmonic, which is Jackson's 9.119, if you're keeping track at home. And we'll do some physics with this shortly, but still have a few more math preliminaries. What's with these other students? Stay home by cold? Just they've got to get in the game. All right. If you want to check some of those results yourself, again, you could use the components of LZ, LX, and LY. I already wrote this for LZ. Can also write L plus or minus operators like in quantum mechanics as LX plus or minus ILY, which is this operator, either plus or minus I phi, plus or minus d by d theta, plus I cotangent theta d by d phi. And you would want to use these results you all learn in quantum, namely L plus or minus acting on a YLM gives this constant L minus or plus M times L plus or minus M plus 1 square root times YLM plus or minus 1. And the other main results, you'll remember L squared commutes with every separate component of L. And these results are sometimes written as L cross L operator is I times L, which would be a bit weird for a classical vector, for its cross product to not be zero with itself. L commutes also, of course, with del squared, whose angular character is mainly the L squared operator anyway. And LZ YLM is M YLM. Then what do the J squared operators do to the vector spherical harmonic? Just what you would expect. Y L J M, when acted on by J squared, will give J times J plus 1 times the same function. It is, we've designed it with Clebsch-Gordan coefficients to be an eigenstate of J squared. And J Z, we've also made it an eigenfunction of that. YLJM acted on by JZ will be capital M YLJM. And the complete set of commuting operators are J squared, JZ, L squared, LJM has eigenvalue LL plus 1 YLJM. And S squared, of course, has eigenvalue 2 And of course, these are not eigenfunctions of LZ or SZ, because those operators don't commute with J squared. So one of the most important properties of these vector spherical harmonics is their orthonormality and completeness. So we can write the orthonormality as the integral of y l j m of theta phi star conjugated dotted into y l prime j prime m prime theta phi over the d omega sine theta d theta d phi is a Kronecker delta in J, Kronecker delta in L, Kronecker delta in M. And the one way to write the completeness relation is that you could expand any vector field A of X could be expanded as a sum from j equals 0 to infinity. Sum from capital M is minus j to j. Sum radial function fjm of r times xjm of x hat plus gjm of r y j plus 1, that's the L value, j plus 1, yjm of x hat. This doesn't mean, of course, x unit vector. It means the direction of the vector x. Plus a radial function hjm of r. Yj minus 1, jm of x hat. So any vector field can be written this way, and you can use Fourier's trick to find these radial functions. If you're given a of x, you can go backward from this identity and calculate these radial functions, which I guess I should write that out. For instance, let's say you know your vector field A, and you want to find this decomposition into vector spherical harmonics, then fjm of r you could calculate by doing this integral over d omega of xjm of theta phi conjugated, dotted into the vector field A of r theta phi. Right, and similarly you would do gjm, except with y j plus 1 jm star, and you would, could get the radial function hjm of r with projecting onto yj minus 1 jm vector spherical harmonic. One of the most important properties of all these is how the gradient operators act on these. And in particular, maybe the most important, you can also find these in Varshilovich if you want, 7.3.53. One of the most important is that the divergence of any radial function times the x vector spherical harmonic is zero. This is important because, remember, that's one of Maxwell's equations when there are no sources. Del dot E is zero, del dot H is zero. And because of that equation, that's basically why Jackson only introduces x, the x vector spherical harmonic. But there are some reasons why the others I think you'll want to know about. And in the notes, I wrote a whole bunch of other identities. Maybe I should just bring those up and talk about them for a minute instead of writing them all out. It should be a little bit painful to watch. I could make it a little bigger. Can you read that okay? Okay, yeah, so that the top equation is the one I just wrote. If you take the divergence of F times yj plus 1 jm, then this is not zero, and it will give you basically this quantity involving a derivative of the radial function and a 1 over r with a constant. Similarly with the yjj minus 1. This is also a useful identity that you can write n hat times an ordinary spherical harmonic of direction n hat as a linear combination of yj plus 1 vector spherical harmonic and yj minus 1. Those are the L values of it. The gradient you can write in terms of these. This is so convenient because to know these formulas, because it's really nasty if you had to write the curl and the gradient divergence of these. But if you just know it's in the vector spherical harmonics and my Mathematica notebook, I put in the supplement directory, you can calculate all these. Then if you look up these formulas from Varshilovich or in the notes, you've got the curl in terms of a yj plus 1 and a yj minus 1, the curl of fx. And there is also some extra simplifications if the radial functions involved are any spherical Bessel function. When that is true, then this thing here, this d by dr plus j plus 1 over r, simplifies just to be another spherical Bessel function of the same type. Like z might be jl, or it might be yl, or it might be a Hankel function. So curl of ZL XLM gives ZL plus 1 times the vector spherical harmonic with the L increased to L plus 1 and the J kept the same as LM and so on. So anyway, these are all useful formulas, and these are more specialized if your radial functions, like we're going to usually have in our calculations, these are usually going to be spherical Bessel functions for us. Okay, so let's do some physics then with this and go back to the board. And I think I told you there is a sheet with, I think, all those identities in the supplement directory. So what we're going to do, and this is following the lead also of Jackson to some degree, is we're going to make use of this relation here, this zero divergence, to do a multiple expansion of the vector field. Okay, so basically the idea is to use this equation as our starting point to enforce the transversality condition, which is the zero divergence condition. And we can do that and start by with that for either E or H. Very simply, by expanding E or H only in terms of the XJM or XLM. I guess I've written in the notes. So basically, that's the logic. So we'll have to do separately. I think I had warned you that just like it was useful to define transverse electric and magnetic multiples in a waveguide, it's useful to do that here also for spherical waves. And so we're going to have TM and we're going to have TE multiples. So let me do the TM multiple first, which again are usually called the electric multiple solutions. So first of all, they obey the Helmholtz equation, our monochromatic fields, use E for the electric to indicate electric multiple, del squared plus k squared h, once we're outside sources, is zero. And they obey the transversality equation. Okay, these are TM modes, so they are starting off. We start off by imposing this transversality condition on H. Which means we can simply write HLM of E. Sorry, that's a superscript. As a radial function, I'll define in a minute, times XLM of theta phi for a general solution, assuming there are no angular boundaries. Okay, we're looking at the fields in free space where there are no boundary surfaces. And then we'll calculate E for that multiple, for the electric multiples, in our usual way we did before in waveguides, as IZ0 over K, the curl of HLM of E. So that's our logic for how to get the electric multiples. We just make this radial function times x. We haven't specified what is the nature of the spherical solutions, so we'll just keep that completely general and say FL of kr it's some linear combination of the two independent solutions. We could take any two. Let's just take, for simplicity, the Hankel functions, HL1 of KR plus AL2 HL2 of KR. And later one would have to specify these constants to fully characterize the field. But basically that is the most general in free space multiple solution of order L and M. And the same logic can be done now to get the other set of solutions. For the TE or magnetic multiple solutions, we will demand these equations, del squared plus k squared E vector with M superscript for magnetic, the LM multiple Odell Bayes-Helmholtz's equation, and it obeys del dot E LM of M is zero, which we can immediately impose at the outset by choosing it to be an, again, just like here with the X vector spherical harmonic. So this we're going to immediately satisfy by making ELM of M to be some radial function, I'll call it GL of KR, XLM of theta phi. This automatically obeys del dot E is zero. And then the H will be calculated by taking the curl of that. HLM of M will be the usual relation, minus I over K Z naught curl of E magnetic LM. And this GL is, again, some general combination of two independent Hankel functions or other spherical Bessel functions. And basically, although I haven't proved it, I'm just going to assert something that is true. Those give the a complete set of solutions, the combination of those two sets. Have a good meeting. The other stuff wasn't good. Okay, so with these two sets of solutions, we can expand any solution of Maxwell's equations in free space. Region where there are no sources and monochromatic. Fixed frequency. And here is what that expansion looks like. The most general H is a sum over L and M constants ALM for the electric multipoles times a radial function that'll be a linear combination of spherical Bessels times XLM theta phi. Maybe I won't write the theta phi just to save space. Then minus I over K, magnetic multiple AM of LM times the, for the magnetic multiples, we get their part of H, their contribution to H, by taking the curl of the GL of KR. Yes. Well, let me just write GL of R XLM. And for E, we get the electric part of the LM multiple by taking the curl of this term in H we wrote up here, curl of FL of R XLM. And on the other hand, we get the magnetic multiple part of E. That's the one that was set directly equal to a to the XLM vector spherical harmonic. That has to be a curly brace. Okay, so again, when you want the electric multiple, you just set it equal to the XLM times the linear combination of Bessels, and you get the electric part by taking the curl of that term, and with the constant IZ0 over K. When you want the magnetic multiple, it has a simple electric field, just an X by itself. But to get the magnetic field part of that magnetic multiple, you have to take the curl. And that's where these formulas for the curl, if you don't really like taking a curl of messy stuff, which describes me pretty accurately, you might find these formulas useful. There's another identity Jackson writes, which I'll just state without deriving. That's pretty useful. Which is, of course, we can do Fourier's trick to find these coefficients. If we're given the field and we want to find the multiple moment, these ALMs, and AE and AM, LM. But there's a nice point made in Jackson's equation 9.123, which is that you can also calculate the magnetic multiple and radial function if someone hands you the field, by just doing one integral, k over root LL plus 1, integral of an ordinary spherical harmonic conjugated times r dot h, integral d omega. And similarly, z naught times AELM, it times its radial part, FL of KR, is minus K over root LL plus 1 times the integral of YLM star times R dotted into the electric field that someone gives you and wants to know the multiple constants. So I find this a remarkable result, but it's kind of in parallel to what we did in waveguides. If you remember, when we wanted the magnetic multiples, then E dotted into Z hat had, right, the EZ component, which we sometimes called psi, we could calculate everything from that. So it's kind of analogous to that. And similarly, when we wanted the electric multiples that had transverse magnetic, transverse electric, E is transverse magnetic character, then, right, we could calculate everything from HZ, which then we called psi. And then we had formulas that everything was controlled by the sort of non-transverse component. And from that, you can get the entire multiples. Okay. So, one more formal thing I want to do now is relate this to the angular momentum in the field. Which brings us to sections, the next sections in Jackson. We now have pretty much the vector spherical harmonic toolkit that we'll use in some applications for the next couple of weeks, next few weeks. So sections 9.8 and 9.9, these deal with energy, angular momentum, and the angular distribution of radiation in various contexts. And with our field expansions, it's pretty straightforward to get these properties. So let's start with angular momentum. And I think those of you who took E&M1 might remember that problem 6.10, I think, was an assigned problem, which was to find the angular momentum density in an electromagnetic field. I'll call it the instantaneous angular momentum density in an electromagnetic field, which is, you should think of this as the angular momentum per unit volume, which can vary throughout space. And that problem, you're asked to derive this L, script L, this for density. If it's a homogeneous medium, it'll be mu epsilon. If it's vacuum, this would be mu naught epsilon naught. But if it's a homogeneous linear medium, we could use also the mu and epsilon of that medium and take the cross product of X with E cross H. It's a pretty simple formula. Remember, angular momentum is always referred to some coordinate origin. So we're talking about having a little unit volume here at a vector x. Oh, and we're calculating the angular momentum density relative to that origin. This is an origin-dependent quantity. And so this goes to the time averaged in the usual way. For monochromatic fields, you can write it in vacuum as 1 over 2 c squared. Our usual trick, the real part of x cross e cross h conjugate, will accomplish taking the time average for monochromatic fields. And okay, in Jackson's notation, he calls this M, equation 9.137. So in general, one would have to plug in our full expansion of the multiple fields, but in a lot of cases, you're going to find a single multiple dominates. And so let's work this out just for individual single multiples, how much angular momentum they carry. I guess I haven't specialized yet to a single multiple. Okay, so I'm working it out a little more general than that. So let's work it out for an electric. Or TM multiple. But keep it general. I will assume there's only one L present, but I'll allow it to have a superposition of different M magnetic index. So I'll write that as a sum from M is minus L to L of the multiple constant AELM times XLM. And let's pick the outgoing Hankel function, which normally when we're moving far away from a source, we will have outgoing radial waves. And so we'll have the first Hankel function only at infinity. And then, of course, EL would be I over K Z naught, the curl of that. So let's work it out. The angular momentum time average, angular momentum density will be 1 over 2 c squared. Now I've gone to free space with mu naught and epsilon naught. And we have this double cross product, so we can do the back cab rule. So we'll have E times X vector dotted into the conjugate of H. that is zero for TM modes, TM waves, electric multiples. And the other term is not zero, H conjugate times X dot E. But X dot E is X dotted into I Z naught over K, curl of HL, which we can also write as I Z naught over K X cross del dotted into HL. But this X dot L is starting to look like an angular momentum operator, orbital angular momentum operator, right? X dot del is in fact minus L over I. So that means that this lth part of the angular momentum density, well, that's assuming only one, this L is present, will be 1 over 2 C squared Z naught over K real part of HL conjugate times L dot into HL. Which is simply mu naught over 2 omega real part of H conjugate times L dot H. Okay. Another way of writing it. So what we would often want, since we're in a spherical geometry, we might want to go out to a distance r, like from a source, or an antenna, or an atom, or a molecule, or a nucleus, and think of a spherical shell of thickness dr centered on the radiating quantity, and find the total angular momentum content in that spherical shell. So that would be the time averaged angular momentum in a thin spherical shell between R and R plus dr. I claim, now I'll go over to Jackson's notation as dl, dm sub l would then be mu naught over 2 omega dr over k squared real part of the sum over m and a dummy index m prime, right, when we take the sum here and then we square it, we can write that as a sum over m and m prime. And we'll have these coefficients, a l m prime conjugate times a e l m. And then we'll have this integral of L dotted into XLM prime conjugate times XLM d omega. I'll have to do that integral, but that's not too hard because we know the integral properties of these. We can use the fact that XLM is, as we wrote earlier, can be written as capital L times an ordinary YLM over root LL plus 1. And so L dotted into XLM prime here times XLM, that integrand, is simply going to give an L squared acting on a spherical harmonic, which will be of an LL plus 1. And there will be an LL plus 1 from here. And then there will be a YLM prime conjugate and an L operator and a YLM. And so this is a simplified form for this differential angular momentum density, radial density, I should call it now, because we integrated over angles, which is mu naught over 2 omega k squared, real part of the sum over m and m prime indices, electric multiple ALM prime conjugate, AELM. And then this integral we're left with doing YLM star, LM prime star, LYLM d omega. You can simplify this further, and Jackson does that, but let me just give a more useful formula, which is what you get if there's just one single multiple component M that's non-zero, which is not so uncommon. Like if you come into a hydrogen atom with linearly polarized light, then you would basically have a dipole with only M equals 1 radiating. I'm sorry, only M equals 0 radiating. And then for that case, with one component in the multiple, then you get this dm dr for the z component is mu naught over 2 omega k squared m times the absolute value of the coefficient AELM squared. And mx and my vanish. So it's fairly simple to find the angular momentum. It's also not too hard to do the energy. So let's do that next. If you have a full coherent sum over all the multiples, it's just a little more complicated. You've got to keep track of the double summation over L and M and L prime and M prime. But it's pretty straightforward. Okay, so we're going to next do the energy stored in an electric multiple. Between R and R plus DR. the same kind of way. Spherical shell centered on our, usually on our source, is the origin. And so again, for harmonic fields, the energy density, time averaged, energy density, little lowercase u, is epsilon over 4, e dot e conjugate, plus z naught squared h dot h conjugate. In the radiation zone, which is where I think I'm going to work, these two terms are equal. So you could calculate either one and double it. And then I claim the energy stored in per unit dr will be du dr is mu naught over 2k squared, sum over m and m prime, AELM prime conjugate, AELM. And now you have this simple integral, XLM prime conjugate, dotted into XLM, d omega. And of course that integral is a Kronecker delta, we said, orthonormality of the vector spherical harmonics. So du dr is just mu naught over 2k squared, sum over m, absolute AELM squared. One of the interesting things is comparing these two formulas for a single LM mode. Let's look at their ratio, dmz dr over du dr. What is that in words? That's the angular momentum density, radial density, divided by the radial energy density. And you see the coefficients will drop out, this AELM squared, and you just get m over omega. And we can connect that to the photon interpretation, right? Because an LM multiple carries angular momentum for n photons, which would be n times mh bar units of angular momentum, right? And the energy it would carry would be n times h bar omega. And so nmh bar over n h bar omega is just going to be this m over omega that we find just from purely classical physics. All of this discussion was only for the orbital momentum, but there could be spin. Contribution of the angular momentum too, which I haven't considered so far, like if you had circular polarization. But let me leave it there and we'll continue traipsing through the world of vector spherical harmonics next time.